And I would also like to remember that this meeting is being recorded. Please, someone, feel the pressure now. Harald, you will not join this meeting, otherwise I could have scribed myself.
Dan?
Unfortunately, not this time. I was not able to prepare at all for this meeting, so scribing will not go too well.
Jan Ivar?
Yeah, I'm a terrible scribe, but yeah, I could try.
Maybe we should just stop and record the decisions rather than trying to scribe everything that is said, because we have the slides.
Yeah, that's never a really bad idea, so.
Yeah. Thank you, Jan Ivar, and if you want to swap during the meeting, just say so.
Okay.
Yeah. So let's move on the slides. So let's start on the media capture stuff, and Bernard, will you take it from here? I think you have done most of the slide.
Yeah, I'll just turn the slides, and the folks who have the slides, you can speak to them, okay? There's also WebRTC PC, but we'll get to that later. All right, 350. I guess that's for you, Jan Ivar.
Yes, so, I didn't write the slide here, so I was a little confused by the mentions of the context changes. And as far as I'm not familiar with the feature policy proposal, and I did look at the permission spec, and even though request is still in the document, I don't believe it came back. It just never went away. So I prodded someone to try to remove that. As far as I know, no one is actively pushing a request. Does anyone know otherwise? Then,
sorry, Jan Ivar, I'm just missing too much context to understand what the issue is here.
I'm just noticing on the slide, which I didn't write, except at the bottom. As far as I know, the only thing remaining here is the text that I just added to PR 421. So if unless anyone has anything else to bring up on the slide, I think I'm good. So there's a bullet that says recent context changes, and I don't know who contributed that.
It seems it might have been Harald, and he's not on the call, so maybe we should.
Okay.
Is there any conclusion we could record here?
Well, as far as I'm concerned, this can be closed once PR 421 is closed.
Okay. Could you?
Just people should review PR 421. Is that the action item?
Yes.
Yep.
Okay, next, 380. I guess Harald was going to do that, but he's not here. Jan Ivar, do you want to take this one?
sure. The there's some, yeah, this is a PR that is in the permission spec, so someone just needs to review that. That's pretty much, Harald and I are both okay with it, I think. From what I can tell on GitHub. And,
so just one thing on the previous one. It looks like 421 has been closed.
Oh, it was closed and not merged? Oh.
It was merged, no.
It was merged. Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Sorry, are you looking at media capture or some of the links in this slide go to the wrong spec? This would be 421 in media capture.
Oh, okay. Sorry, I'm looking at the wrong one then.
Right. It's a text for adding privacy indicator requirements. It was Dan Barnett and I worked on different parts, and this was Dan's part, and I did them. We did a back and forth on the text a little bit there. So
is 421 replacing 411 then?
Let me check. 411 is.
There is no 421 as far as I can tell.
There's a media capture pull 421.
Okay.
And yes, it does replace 411.
Oh, okay.
So, could you send a link to that? Because it's not accessible to me.
No, okay. We need to put the link into the IRC.
1 second. There. I also have I can give you a preview link as well.
Yeah, Colin, that link works for me. I don't know what's up. You might need to like re-log in or something.
If someone can remind me how to do action item with Scribe.
Can someone just repost the link again? I wasn't in IRC, so I'm not getting the history.
Okay, I'll do that. One more time. And the preview link.
So Dom or Vivian, could you record an action?
Okay. Try.
Yeah, Yanavar, you aren't trying to get us to approve this right now, right? I mean, you sent...
No.
You were able to send this out just recently, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah, so the action is for people to review it after the meeting.
Right. Thanks, by the way, Yanavar.
Sure. So, Colin, does that solve
that
our issue?
That worked for me, thanks. Yep.
Cool.
Yep.
So back to issue 380. at TPAC, we talked about the device info permission and to add some restrictions to it. And that PR in permission spec, which is linked there, issue pull request 131, should be, someone should review that as well. Although I don't know who, since this is in the permission spec, I don't know who that would be.
No,
but certainly anyone here is welcome to look over it as well.
Please do that. I think Harald has been quite active, but the more eyes we get on it, the better. Okay, should we move on? Yeah, this one I'm going to talk about. There is issue 387, which Yanivar filed in August, basically saying that the word revoked was gone from the text where the spec talked about when all tracks had stopped, the source should stop, and all permissions is revoked. The spec has since been updated and refers to permission state in the permission spec. And if that state is not granted, then the device accessible map is set to false. And to me, this seems to fix issue 387, given we also merge 421, which talks about the use of this device's accessible map. Anyone who thinks otherwise, Yanivar, you filed the issue originally?
Yeah, this seems good to me. This issue and 350 sort of intertwined a little bit, and I think we're good now.
Good. And again, people should review PR 421, of course. Okay. Next one, I guess. Bernard, this is your. We can't hear.
There we go. Yeah. Okay, so a little bit about the background on this one. Oh boy, the voice is horrible. Can anyone hear me?
Yeah,
I can
hear you.
Okay. Basically, this issue was first raised by Nick Doty in a privacy review relating to device change API. And then Pulip brought up the issue of whether you could have the same privacy issue with enumerate devices. And so one of the fixes for this was that device change be fired before enumerate devices so that you couldn't use enumerate devices to basically get the same synchronous change in all browsing contexts. And my understanding is that PR 412 actually mandates that enumerate devices return old data until the event fired. So you can't get anything that from enumerate devices that you wouldn't have gotten from the device change event. So I think 412 addressed this issue, unless I'm missing something. Yanivar?
Yes, I agree.
You agree? Does anybody
else
have any questions? So can we move on to the next one?
I couldn't hear Sion, basically. His audio was cut out.
Hello, can you hear me now?
Yeah, now I can hear you.
You're still a little faint.
Just a comment that I agree with Elvinar and Yanivar that the PR 412 resolved the issue on this slide.
Okay, great. Then we can move on.
And the next one is about device change events when the page is not in focus. So the issue is raised by errors. The current spec requires that we fire the event when the the following are true. One, the permission is granted or a local device is attached to an active media stream or the document is fully active and has focus. So the question asked by errors is when the permission is not granted and the local device is not attached to active stream, document is fully active but not in focus in that situation, whether user agent must not or may fire the device change event. Basically, to say the requirement around to say if that not satisfied, whether the user agent may fire the event or not. And based on discussion on the in the GitHub, I think there are two options Harold kind of mentioned. Number one is must not. But in focus, security protection against the fingerprinting issue we talked about in the earlier slide. And the number two option is put as a may. Basically allows the current behavior and then give more time for browser vendors to catch up with the specific security protection. That was a little bit confusing in the GitHub, what the question is, whether it's a must or must not. Yanivar, any comment on the way to kind of lay out the question here? Is that any confusion still?
I'm sorry, the audio here keeps, everyone sounds like they're in a bucket. So I'm having a little hard time understanding. Can you repeat the question?
Question is, do you still see any confusion in the issue here?
Well, Well, I thought it was clear to begin with, but clearly it wasn't clear since several people were able to misread it. Maybe I'm wrong, but to me, when a spec says to do something, it's not an option to do. And when it specifies when you should do it, it's not an option to implement and do it at other times than when the specification says. But since this is a privacy issue, it's probably worthwhile to add some text to explicitly state that, you know, something like the use agent must not fire this event at other times, maybe. What do you think?
Yeah, I agree, you know, for the best to secure the protection. And personally, my understanding of the group intent is also must not in this case, especially for two-step protection.
Yes, I agree. Harald's here, not here to defend his view. I think he's the one who wanted it may, but I think the text is unambiguous, but it could be clear. And the problem stems from that. I think most specs are written in the context of, you know, the current browsing context, meaning that it talks about one tab. So since this is in a global event, it's a little unclear that these are the rules for which every tab should react to this global event. And when read that way, it seems clear that you only get the event if you have permission, if you're the active page, or if you have active input focus, or you have the permission. And in other cases, you do not get the event. So I can volunteer to add a text that says explicitly that, you know, must not fire this event at other times.
So, do you record an action on yourself?
Okay.
Yeah, well, another option is that an action is the one and the only one, you know, the requirement that fulfills that.
I'm sorry, can you say it again?
Could everyone not speaking mute, because there seems to be some really bad echo?
The feedback's all coming from Finn. That's who's like that's where the feedback's coming from. So I don't know if you can like get to a headset or something. We're having a hard time.
Share this as possible.
Yeah, it seems okay to me for anyone to take it from here with a PR.
Okay, good. And the PR was basically to clarify a bit more.
Yes, right.
Yeah. To clarify, must not.
That's right.
Okay, thanks. For 17.
Yeah, for 17 is what should be the expectation of the enumerated devices when there is no origin. And the typical example is JavaScript console for about blank page. And there are some brief discussions in GitHub. You know, one way to say that is given there's no cookies or nothing really being stored, so device ID should not be unique per session, and the basic will not be persistent across sessions. And also a question about whether we should just reject that promise. I think I put a comment there. I'd be, it'd be nice to keep the JavaScript console, for example, as a valid test option for web developers. For example, at this point, both Firefox and Edge allow get user media to be used in the about a blank page when you go to console. Chrome rejects it because Chrome requires strictly about HTTPS origins. But at least for Firefox and Edge, we still allow that. And I think it's beneficial for developers to keep it that way. So what I put here as a proposal based on the previous discussion in GitHub, to allow the method to return successfully with unique device IDs, but to not persist any device ID across sessions. So open to other suggestions from the group.
Janimer here. I was just, I assume this just would work, and maybe you're right that we need text, but I guess I assumed that About Blank had a sort of got unique device IDs just like every other origin, even though it's a quasi origin. But I don't know if the spec needs to say that. And I would add that given the, our language now on permission indicators, those two now rely on device IDs. So it's important to that device IDs exist for all browsing contexts, whether they're tied to an origin in a traditional sense or if they are special pages like this.
Yeah. I agree with anyone. For me, the spec is sufficient. And I tried to find other specs talking about brand page and didn't really see any good examples.
So you're saying you think the spec is okay as it is on this one?
Yes, right. I think once we capture the consensus in the kind of working group report, I think that's okay to leave the spec as is. That's my opinion.
Any other comments?
Yes. Please. I agree.
Okay, I will record that. And move on.
Okay, we're now going to talk about WebRTC pull requests. And hopefully everyone's here to talk about these. The first one is hold examples. And we've been talking about all the different ways we can do things like send silence or not send. And so given that discussion, I thought we should review the hold examples in the current spec to make sure they're what we want. The first one is example 3, and I think the intent of this example was to demonstrate music on hold. So what it does is replaces the track with a music track and then sets the direction to send only. The issue with that is it does play the music immediately, but it doesn't stop rendering the received track until after negotiation. At least that's my understanding of how the spec works. So what I added here was to basically mute the receiver's track by setting enable to false. People have that? Any opinion on that?
That works for me, and I guess you could also mute the video or audio element it's attached to.
Yes, I guess that would be right if it was just then had a video element as well. Yeah.
But this works for me.
Okay. The next one is example 4, and it basically just says to stop sending audio, and what it does is it toggles the active element to false. But a couple of things about that. It doesn't really include the context. I think what this is trying to do is to respond to example 3 where the remote peer puts you on music on hold. I think that's what it's supposed to do. I've been looking at this one and a couple of thoughts. One thing is essentially what would happen in the case where the peer puts you on hold is if you notice in example 3, he sets the remote peer sets his direction to send only, presumably would then send that STP offer for send only to the receiver in example 4, to the answer in example 4. So one way of handling this would be, basically I think the right thing would happen if in this example you actually called set remote description with the send only offer, right? Because that would basically it would result in the direction, the current direction becoming receive only. which is, I think, what you're trying to do. So I'm not sure this proposed fix is quite right. I mean, it basically demonstrates the kind of things that you want to happen, which is to mute the sender track so you're not sending. Actually, this sends silence. But then essentially set the direction to receive only. But I think that will happen naturally even by just calling set remote description, even if set direction had been send receive, because it'll output receive only. What do people think?
This is Taylor. I think you're right that this would occur as a result of just the offer answer exchange. I think maybe example 4 makes more sense as a standalone example where I want to put myself on hold immediately. And
right.
One comment is that the example at the top, you would stop sending all RTP packets immediately, whereas in the bottom, you'd be sending muted media, which would mean silence, but actually would be sending RTP packets, so there's a slight difference there.
Right, but if you called set remote description on the send only offer, then you would actually stop sending RTP at all, right?
Right.
Which is, I guess, another reason why the top one isn't quite right. So I'll do one of two things. Either rewrite this using just set remote description to say, hey, I'm responding to the send-only offer. I think that's right. Or if I do keep this one, we'll redo it as essentially putting yourself on hold, which I think would be more correct. Yeah.
But Bernard Collier, I mean, everything you've been saying makes sense, and love to clarify these examples. But I just like to make sure there's an example in there that's really clear that's about, how to stop sending packets, so that you stop using,
right.
And make all the examples clear of whether the difference between somebody not hearing anything and not packets going, because that's when there's been so much confusion
right.
about hold. And I don't really care too deeply about the music
yeah.
on hold examples, but I care that the real case I care about, which is stop sending packets, that it's very clear how to do that.
Okay. So, and actually we should write this down as a reminder to me. But to respond, Colin, I think the right way to just stop sending packets, which is what example 4 is kind of showing, would be to actually replace track with null. And we now have that in the spec, so we could actually show that in the example. And that would stop all the encodings as opposed to just the first one, which was described here. So I think the action item for this is one, to in example 4 to replace this by a replace track null and to add another one which shows calling set remote description. Which would actually do things naturally. I think that's the right way to go for these. Okay, one more, actually two more.
But I'm back to the previous
yeah.
one. Is there a difference between stop sending packets and stop sending both RTP and RTCP?
Well, so neither setting to active to false nor set track null. I don't think neither one stops sending RTCP.
Let me be more precise than I meant stop sending RTP. I would assume RTCP would still happen, and the ICE keep alive packets and consent check
right,
packets
those still
would
happen. The main difference is stopping one encoding, which is dot active false, versus stopping all RTP. So anyway, I think
yeah, I agree. If we have replaced track null,
yeah.
then that's better.
Yeah, I think that's better. Okay. So example 5 is now essentially to reverse what happened in example 3. So now you're re-enabling sending audio capturing from the mic. So you're taking the person off music on hold and then talking to them. But we don't say that's what you're trying to do. So we just want to add some context to say that's what it was. It's taking someone off music on hold and set direction to send receive now. So example 6 is now essentially the response to example 5. You're being taken off of hold. I think the same things that we said for example 4 apply here, which is basically to instead of replace track null, bring back bring back a sending track, like the mic track or something. And so that would be the, instead of just inactivating a particular stream, which is what's done here. Okay. So I'll turn this over to, is Missy here?
Yeah, but back yeah. to the earlier one, I mean, to me, your proposals on the last two sounded good, and I heard no other comments.
Okay.
So let's go with that, unless someone says something now. Okay. Then we can move on.
Okay, so last time we discussed this and discussed about the option, and Justin Bertie summarized in the issue the three options, and there is one option to add one field. There is the second one to create fully separated password, auth, token, and future-proof something. That maybe could add, so create a new dictionary for the password, create a separated dictionary for the old token and for future use, maybe. And there is a hybrid solution. We have different preferences about the solutions, and we need to get a consensus. So I'm very keen to hear your opinion. So add one attribute. This is a very small change, but not as future-proof as the second option. I created or started working on this in the second version also, but I wanted to know your opinion about this.
So in the second one, just to refresh the memory, you would have like an OAuth token, and you could conceivably have some other type of token.
Yes, you could any kind of dictionary include later on. So you could have a dictionary for the username password. You could have an OAuth token, like so the KID, the MAC key, and the access token. And you could later on create, if you go back in the previous slide, so you remove on the previous slide, there is the username credential, remove this and add a new dictionary for username credential, a separated dictionary, and separate the dictionary for the old things. And if we will have any different new credential type later on, then we can add this very easily. So it is, as I mentioned, more future-proof than adding one attribute to this. And there is a hybrid solution, but I do not like this. But this is in the issue also. So Justin prefers first the hybrid because it is somehow trying to make small changes, but I prefer more to make it rightly and make it cleanly. I think making this change make it more cleaner solution. So this is why I prefer the two.
Can you show us what the two proposals, what two and three would look like?
Yes, this is in the issue. If you open the issue 7.1.4, then you will see the three options.
Okay, I think we should probably take a look at that. Let me see if I can bring this up.
I think we should, but I'm a bit concerned that neither Justin nor Ecker is on this call, so we should definitely take a look, but I'm not sure we can really decide.
Okay. So you want to take a look at the patch, Cullen, or the issue, or both?
I leave it up to the chairs how they want to proceed.
Okay. Well, show you the patch. Let's see that.
Not the patch. I mean the issue on the WebRTC issue.
7.14.
Yeah.
Okay, hold on.
Let me just summarize it. It looks like the first approach is to just add attributes to the same dictionary where they may be null depending on what type of credential is used, whereas the second option is to have two completely separate dictionary types.
So it seems like no one was in favoring of one. We're just really going between two and three here that we're trying to sort out, right? Of the
actually, the one is the smallest change to the spec and also to the implementations.
Right.
Okay. So well, here's Justin's summary of the three. I guess is that
yes. This is what I'm
adding.
So adding one attribute is pretty small change.
Okay, I mean, I understand, I'm not in favor of that because it doesn't solve the problem of what happens when we get the next type of token, right?
Yes.
So I can see why, so I lean sort of towards two or three. Given all of these systems have very common things like username, I guess I don't have a strong opinion.
Yeah, I guess the hybrid one, right, it makes it look pretty much the same, but it does essentially a type def, so the credential can be either a DOM string or the RTC credential token.
So is there a difference between how much code we break between two and three?
Well, I think three doesn't break anything, and neither does one, but as Colin said, it's not this comprehensive. I think two isn't backward compatible, which is kind of the issue, right? I think that's maybe why Justin wasn't so happy with that.
Yes, but maybe we could handle with Adapter.js or something like this in the meantime, so the soft transition.
Just a comment on Adapter, this is Yanavar. Adapter usually is not for this kind of stuff. It's to polyfill the spec on older browsers, not the other way around. I don't think it could be used here.
Okay. Anyhow, I feel the second one is much more cleaner solution. So whatever, if the username will be not used later on, then why it is there? If the credential type, I don't know, in the future we will not use it. Who knows?
Yeah. Okay, I guess we won't hear consensus on this one today.
Okay.
Especially since Justin and Eke are not here. I'm a bit concerned of deciding anything. So we would have to take it on another meeting or discuss more in the issue or on the list.
Okay.
So is one potential next step to just for people to weigh in and on 714?
Yeah, please do that. Either directly in the issue or using the mailing list.
Okay, on the next slide, this is the old token, what we're receiving. So the old token credential. And on the slide 23, last meeting we discussed that we need to not remove the supported HMAC algorithms and not send to the authorization server this information, but use some static key length and the question is that should we use this key length and the algorithm in the old client parameter, the HS256. So am I understand it correctly, what we have discussed last time? So for me, it was not fully clear, the decision.
Well, I thought it was basically that if you generated 256, you could always cut it down, so you didn't need to necessarily tell it how much of a key to generate.
Okay.
That's what I remember anyway.
OK. Okay. And the second thing that in the old parameter the key is coming back in JSON web key format or the encrypted web key format. We not discussed, but I guess we want to have this MAC key in base 64 format. So the old client need to extract this key MAC key parameter from the JSON web key and only pass down not the JSON web key but only the base 64 URL encoded key. If I'm correct. Last time we did not discuss about this, but I want to make sure that, that we understand the same thing.
Is there anyone on the call who knows these details? Because unfortunately, I do not.
Anyhow, I created the two versions, so I would be happy if you could review the two to add one attribute and also to create a separate dictionaries. So I created these two variants, and I look forward to any comment or help.
Yeah, so put that in the minutes. Please review.
Putting in the minutes is not going to get it done here. Why don't, Stefan, can you send an email to Justin asking him to review it?
Sure.
Or something like that. But let's ask some specific people to review this one, because otherwise it won't get reviewed.
Yeah, it's a good point. So that's action on me. Okay, let's move on.
All right, so this is the topic that we ended the last virtual interim discussing. To catch people up, we'd like a way to trickle the UFRAG along with ICE candidates and have a way of trickling end of candidates for a specific mid UFRAG as well. And the last time we were discussing this, I presented an option to add a new ICE event interface, which is to replace on ICE candidate add ICE candidate. But Jan Ivar commented that he didn't see any reason why PR 757 wouldn't work, which just changed the existing RTC ICE candidate. So if you go to the next slide, I updated that PR and here's a short summary. The normal candidates stay the same, and we'll still have the done gathering global null candidate, but end of candidates can be represented by a candidate dictionary with a null SDP string, essentially. And I think this would be the sort of the smallest change option. There were some concerns, I think, about backwards compatibility before, but I don't see that as being a huge issue because browsers can start supporting taking in the null candidate for a while and you know, eventually start emitting the null candidate and non-ICE candidate once you know browsers have had a chance to update and developers are notified of the change. So if this is acceptable to people, this is what I propose as the simplest way to get what we need.
Taylor, this is Dan Burnett. Just a quick question.
Mm-hmm.
It appears to me that this actually addresses the sort of, you know, brain dead simple use case in code, which just takes the entire candidate, you know, structure, you know, as received from, you know, from being notified of a new candidate and then passing that into add as candidate. Is that correct? So code that does that, this should work just fine.
Right. If all the code does is JSON.stringify candidate and unstringify on the other end, then no changes to applications would even be necessary.
Exactly. That's what I thought reading it, and so I'm fine with it. Yep.
This is Janimer. I like it too. The only thing I was wondering if instead of null, if we should have an empty string, if that would marginally increase backwards compatibility if anyone tries to do any logging or anything. So we don't.
I'm fine with that.
I think a bunch of code that I've seen does in fact check that it's null rather than the empty string, but I could be wrong.
Now, does it check if the candidate member of the event is null, or if the candidate SDP blob within that is null?
Well, what I've seen is candidate.candidate checking for that being null.
Well, if the event is called candidate, then you would actually have a candidate.candidate.candidate.
Okay. Yeah,
so, yeah, it's a little confusing.
So let's go in here. I mean, I like this idea. I'm perfectly happy with it being null, but I have a slight preference for an empty string just because stuff where we take this and encode it to another protocol and then bring it back out again, it would actually round trip and survive that anyway. But even if we break that stuff, it doesn't matter. That stuff will get fixed. So either way, I'm happy with this.
That's fine. Sounds like there's a preference for an empty string. Does anyone have an objection to being an empty string? I can update the PR then.
Please do, and you take a note, Janimer, that this was liked. 9/16.
All right. Otherwise, are there any objections to this?
No, great job. Thank you.
Yeah. Okay, I guess we can skip the rest of the slides, and that was the previous thing we discussed.
Okay, thanks. So now it's issues. We're about to see issues. And you go first, Colin.
This is about media that can arrive, and it's about the connection rate of how quickly we can connect. So let me sort of prefix this by explaining a little bit that in different calling systems, sometimes you know who you want to call, sometimes you don't. So in a WebRTC system, if we have Alice calling Bob, and Alice knows that she wants to talk to someone who can insert the identity of Bob, then you can set the peer connected identity when you call it, and you'd only connect to Bob, and we're not talking about that case for slightly. But in other systems where Bob can forward the call to Charlie and Alice thought she was following Bob but actually is perfectly willing to talk to Charlie or whoever Bob forward to, we want to figure out the ways to get that hello to happen really quickly. And so what we're talking about here is this idea of what happens with media that arrives before the fingerprints have arrived for it. And in some places, clearly, you know, you don't want to use it, you want to throw it out. You certainly want to be aware of it, and you don't want to tell the user that they have secure media connected to some particular person before you have the fingerprints, because you don't. But on the other hand, you often want to be able to send the hello immediately. So as soon as you know, Alice calls Bob, and as soon as Bob answers, Bob can say hello. And Bob has Alice's fingerprint, okay? It's just, This hello arrives, and keep in mind, Alice in this case is willing to talk to anyone, doesn't care if it's Bob or Charlie, right? So the question is are you forced to throw out this hello packet, or could you possibly render it, and by the end of the hello, you'll probably have the fingerprint and know if it was Charlie or Bob? And this is only about the case where Alice was willing to talk to whoever answered the phone. You know, I'd like to propose that basically we have a system where we can deal with media that arrives before we have the fingerprint that associates with that media. This would be marked as unverified media. Clearly, if you said that we were only doing connected to a certain peer, that would be unacceptable. This media would be thrown out. Later, if a fingerprint arrives that doesn't match the media stream would be torn down. And then we'd have some sort of, optional way to basically allow unverified media in this hello case. And the reason why is because the signaling latency causes clipping on these hellos if you don't have this, and this is a very real problem. I mean, very few systems can get up to the speed that you want to not ever clip the hellos on this type of thing. Basically, the proposal here is fairly. I mean, I'm not proposing a specific mechanism exactly on the API. Just that we go forward with some sort of approach to this problem, right? Which will largely result in a receiver track returned by, you know, can be hooked up to the audio or video tag before you have the fingerprint for it, of course. And you wouldn't mark it as secure. So that's basically the gist of what I'm proposing here. It doesn't actually change too much of our code very much. You still have to deal with this. I would view it as somewhat as an optional thing, just, you know, some way of doing this. So anyway, that's about the main points that I wanted to get across on this. Do people have any thoughts or strong concerns about this one way or the other?
This is Peter.
Go ahead, Peter.
Can you hear me?
Yeah.
Okay, so I agree that this would not be a large change to the spec and it wouldn't be difficult to implement. However, I do have two objections. One is that I think there are security issues with this where we would at least want to make it time-bound and not allow it to be indefinitely unverified, because it's not just a matter of verification, it's, you know, knowing that there isn't a long-term man in the middle. And the second is that this is a new feature that we're adding pretty late in the game when we're trying to wrap up the spec. And I feel like I don't want to be spending any time, especially around security issues, that could delay other work and delay the finalization of the spec.
Okay, so look, let's take those two separately. On the time bound, you know, no problem with that. I get your point. I mean, we could easily bind this to half a second or three quarters of a second or something like that. We're talking about a very small amount of time for the use cases where this is needed. And on the other one, I mean, my take of the spec was this was in the spec for a long time and got sort of accidentally removed without discussion. So, from the very first day on the requirements, I've always asserted, you know, call 1-800-GO-FEDEX was one of the requirements we need to be able to deal with well, and I think you need this to be able to meet that requirement. So, I don't think we're adding this late. I think it got removed without discussion, accidentally, actually, by refactoring of other things. So,
what exactly was there that got removed? Was there the ability to, I mean, was there talk about buffering media or playing out media before the fingerprint?
Playing out media before it arrived, okay. Before you had a fingerprint.
Because here it says buffering media.
Sorry, I don't know. I don't even know where that bullet point was in here from. That's an alternative thing that you could do, is buffer the data until you got the fingerprint and then play it out. That doesn't really work for me because it requires you to be able to speed up the audio somehow, which, yeah, there's products that do that. We do that in some of our products, but it is not really it always has audio artifacts of some sort. And it has audio effects right at the point in time where you're trying to train your echo cancelers, which has bad interference with the echo cancelers. So I'm not really proposing the buffer.
Yeah, I mean, one of the questions I have is whether this problem will be naturally improved by things like TTLS 1.3 and some of the ICE optimizations we've been talking about, or whether we think it's something we're going to have long term.
I think DTLS 1.3 and the ICE optimizations actually make this worse, because what they do is they cause the media path to set up faster. It probably doesn't even change it much because it will set up ahead of time. But the problem that causes this is the delay in the signaling path. And, you know, I don't think any of those changes are going to speed up the signaling path.
We could add a DTLS make it slow method
Well, didn't we also talk about like some optimization of putting the DTLS stuff in to allow it to set up, like in the signaling to make it set up faster?
Yeah. I mean, to allow it to set up before the person answers hello at the prompt. The race condition that you're fighting against is you have a privacy concern of not wanting to reveal your IP addresses and such information before you answer the phone, and the human perception that as soon as you answer the phone, you can say hello and that the other person will get it. And, you know, that's a really nice user experience that people are used to having work and has turned out to be very difficult to deliver that user experience without this type of early media in phone systems.
Go ahead.
Couldn't you solve that by just not notifying the user on the end that's saying hello that the other side's picked up until the other side has received the fingerprint and sent back an ACK that it got the fingerprint?
Well, it's the person saying hello that's the issue here. So Alice calls Bob. Bob answers by doing whatever physical motion they think that they do to answer on their device, whether it's, you know, hitting a button or lifting a receiver or whatever it is, and they instantly think they can say hello.
Why do they think that?
Because most of the systems they've used their whole life deliver that experience by doing exactly this.
Bob has verified Alice's fingerprint. So for his all intents and purposes, right, he thinks everything's fine.
Yeah.
What I'm suggesting is you can add another half a round trip to the signaling to say, I got the fingerprint, and only proceed with the call once that's done.
But the problem is the user experience is the person answers, and then some user interface has to tell them, don't talk yet, okay, until that half round trip happens, and then can say, okay, now it's okay to talk. And it's just not a user experience that anybody wants.
I think
it may not be a human on the other end, right? That's your 1-800-FedEx thing.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, but the gateway to 1-800-FedEx could just say that they haven't answered the call until this extra round of signaling.
Sorry, somebody else was going to say something about the user experience approach, or?
I think, Bernard, you were going to say something.
I think I did.
So I don't think that it's let's say lots of these systems want to allow people to start talking as soon as they answer, and that media not to be lost. I understand we could have another round trip in there and tell them not to do it until then, and there have been some attempts in the past of locally buffering the media and then not sending it until after that round trip had happened, but it has the same buffering approach and the perception from the person that they're being heard when they're not.
Couldn't PR also be used? I mean, you send a preliminary answer immediately, even before Bob answers.
Well, if you want to reveal which devices you're connecting to and the fact of whether somebody answers or doesn't answer or goes to voicemail or all of those things, which is the privacy thing that you run into with the setting up, the full two-way media flow. So, I mean, yes, you can use that to help mitigate this to some degree.
Yeah, and by the way, this isn't just a problem for audio. It can be even worse in video if you lose the keyframe.
Yeah, but that's where I read this buffer a limited amount of unverified media. You could buffer the keyframe or iframe.
Buffering works really well for video, right? But buffering is a surprisingly difficult thing to implement because you have to describe how many streams you're going to buffer on, how much you're willing to buffer. It has all the issues of not storing it, but deciding when to get rid of what you store it, right? It's the usual caching problems. But it does work.
Yeah, I mean, the problem, though, is that for video, it is a substantial buffer, and then you become potentially vulnerable to DOS and other things.
You probably need to be willing to – remember I was talking about the forwarding Alice and Charlie or whatever. Like, you possibly might end up buffering with more than one. It gets complicated quickly.
But what I hear now is Carlin and Bernard think this is something that could be worthwhile.
Yeah, I was just saying I think it's a real problem. I'm not necessarily saying I like the solution, but I just think it's a real problem we've encountered.
Because I was going to say I actually don't see a solution here. And I have the feeling it would be quite some work to iron that one out and get it specced up.
Well, I mean, I'm happy to put together a solution, but I was trying to avoid getting into the weeds of the API, but it's really pretty trivial. It basically, you know, the transceiver that already exists at the point that you're doing this, you allow it to be wired up instead of causing it to create an error before the answer is done. That's all it is. Like, it's like you do the same thing after you've got an answer, except you can wire up a transceiver. And by default, apps wouldn't get this. The application would have to explicitly go and wire things up for this to all work.
Yeah, it's already wired up though. When you call a transceiver, you could wire up the receiver to a video tag. It's just that it wouldn't be rendering until it got the verification.
Yep. So, I mean, there's not much. I mean, actually, what we mostly need to do is delete a couple lines of text out of the draft to put this into the draft as much as.
But the bigger issue I have is with RFC 4572 section 6.2, which basically says, you know, that you must not assume the data is valid.
And we were saying we'll play data that is not verified to be valid. I think that's reasonable.
Let's go to the next slide. Do I have anything more on that? I'm not sure that I do, but anything that's useless. So. Oh, the slide we're on. Okay, yeah. So. Anyway, that is the whole issue. So, you know, I think this is a pretty simple change. I hadn't thought about the time limiting it enough because the app could have time limited it itself if it wanted to. But I don't mind if the browser time limits it. That would definitely need a little bit of proposal write-up of what that would look like. I guess you wouldn't be allowed to set the time limit, would you? It's just we put into the spec some time limit the browser could then enforce.
Well, you could let it be settable, but there'd have to be a max, you know. Say
yeah.
App may not, or it must not be larger than, I don't know, 3 seconds or something.
And, you know, this makes it, this just makes the system better. It just allows you to set up things faster.
Well, there is a trade-off, and the question is, well, there are two trade-offs. One is the spec work, if it's really necessary. The other is the security question of, is there something we're overlooking here that would be a security issue? And I don't think there is, but.
Well, the main thing. The main thing, Peter, that occurred to us was the potential, like video codecs, which are really complicated, for someone to inject some bad stuff in there to try, you know, if they knew of, for example, a buffer overflow or something in the video codec.
Now, note they're still going to have to, they're going to have to be enough of a participant of the call that they have the ICE credentials to be able to set up an ICE connection before they can inject that type of stuff. So it's true. However, keep in mind that Alice was willing to take media from absolutely anyone who answered the call. So someone who had the ICE credentials could have just done a full connection and sent the fingerprint and sent whatever bad stuff they were going to send. So I don't think this changes that much. I do agree you can always ask, well, what about the security questions? And that's why I'm not proposing this be the default behavior. I'm just proposing there be a way to set it. And maybe actually just setting the timeout value with saying a max of 1 second and a default of 0 seconds. Maybe that's an API for controlling the whether this is on or off.
Well, to me, it sounds like you haven't convinced everyone on this call, Cullen. Go ahead.
Okay, so who objects to this? Let's start with that. That's how you deal with everything else here, Stefan, right? So I think if we're going to go on a request the reject of it, I'm going to go and ask questions about who is okay with us removing this from the spec to start with, right? I mean...
But Cullen, honestly, I don't think it's as easy as removing something from the spec. I mean, you said yourself that this was opt-in, so we need an API surface to opt in to this, for example.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't think the API change is that complicated, though. It really isn't.
I don't think the API changes are complex at all. I don't think implementing this is complex at all. I'm concerned with the possible security implications of actually allowing apps to do this.
Yeah, that's my concern too.
I mean, I'd have to spend a fair amount of time talking to people that are more security savvy than me to convince myself before I would ship it in a browser.
Yeah, I know in our, one of the problems we have is in our SSL implementation, I don't think I can actually do this, even if I wanted to. I think the SSL implementation doesn't want me to do it.
Well, I mean, that's a real problem because the SSL connection will almost always arrive before your fingerprint. So, that sounds like I don't understand how it works today in that case.
Well, it doesn't work well, which is the problem.
Right.
I mean, we could always add it to the spec and say, this is an optional thing. Browsers don't have to implement it, and then you can hope that they will. But,
well, I'd be perfectly fine with that because I think they will. I think the argument of whether it's needed or not will become very clear in the marketplace, and they'll add it. So I'm more interested in the spec certainly allowing it.
But doesn't that bring us back to proposing what the spec change would be, and then we take it from there?
Well, you're not even willing. I want you to ask as a chair who objects to this, right? Let's start with that, right? If we have that information, we can decide whether it's worth spending time on. But
I heard Peter saying he objects to this earlier, but I don't know. Maybe you changed your mind.
Well, I don't want us to spend a lot of time on it because I'm not convinced this is, bringing something back that was there already. And I want to make sure that it's optional so that, we can, if a browser feels like there's a security concern here, that it doesn't have to implement it. But if Colin wants to make a PR with a very specific, like, here's what it would be, and then the decision is just, merge or not, which would take, I mean, assuming we don't spend a lot of time talking about it, it's just yes or no. I wouldn't be too opposed to that.
Yeah, I would point out with that.
I would point out that if you want it to be a per transceiver thing, it's not going to go in the RTC configuration. But that's getting a little bit into the details.
Yeah.
Right, okay. That's a good point. I hadn't thought about that. I don't know. What do people think I should do?
I think you should write up some ideas. If anything, that will at least allow me to have a conversation with the security people to see if I could get the changes to actually implement it.
Okay. Okay. I will consider where that all sits.
Okay. Thanks, Carolyn. Let's move on. 921.
Okay, 921. So this was originally filed by FIPPO, and he noticed that he called set remote description with some SDP, and then looked at pc.remotedescription.sdp, and he said, ah, they're not the same. They weren't that different. Some lines moved around, and ICE candidates were added. So he asked the question is there anything in the spec that says that they should be the same? That, you know, essentially what you put in should come out. And I think we had some discussion in the issue, and my proposal is that we don't say anything currently in the spec that they have to be the same, and I guess my proposal would be that we explicitly say that they can be different. And most people, the way that's been implemented is they implementations parse and they validate the description.scp, and then they create their own internal representation. They can add ICE candidates. They might, you know, remove A lines they didn't understand, or they might edit it, change line order. So any of that stuff can happen. And so it's not only not going to be identical, but it might not even be equivalent, however you would define equivalent. Any comments?
I like not having the requirement that the text has to be exactly the same.
Bernard, what you just said, I think, just matches the realities of implementations, and I don't see it being an interop problem.
Yeah, I don't know that there's ever anybody's ever demonstrated any practical problem with them not being the same. I mean, you don't like test this to be test the quality or anything, so. So anyway, I guess the resolution would be maybe put in some few words to just remind people that, hey, these things are different, and don't worry about it.
Great.
Okay.
So I guess Harald is not on the call today.
Well, I think we can still ask the question, basically.
Yeah.
Yes, I guess the question is whether we can delete the legacy getStats API.
This is Janabari. I support this.
I support it too.
Well, I heard supporters and no one against it, so let's do it. Okay, next item.
Okay, 945. So section 5.2 basically says that set parameters should never cause the negotiation needed flag to be set. It's only supposed to change what the media stack is sending or receiving within the envelope negotiated by the offer answer. And so some questions have come up about what happens if you construct a transceiver, call that transceiver with send encoding specifying and simulcast encodings. Can you use set parameters to increase or decrease the number of simulcast encodings sent? And so we've been looking at this, and so I think the way this works, and Peter, please correct me, is after you've called, say you call that transceiver with N encodings, if you then call set local description, you've essentially set the envelope at that point. And if you call set parameters and try to change the number of encodings, that's going to be a problem. Is that right?
Yeah, I think that everyone, when we were talking about how this would affect the offer, and then how it would work with the answer that comes back, I think that everyone was in agreement that you could not then add after that.
Okay. But if you say you haven't called create offer yet, you know, you create the transceiver and then you call set parameters, change the number, you can do that before you call set local, right?
I think that's, yeah, that's kind of an edge case. I don't think anyone thought of doing that.
That's the problem. I just want to make it clear what happens if you do that.
I would be in favor of just saying, like, you pick how many you want when you call add transceiver, and then that's how many you get. And you can turn them on or off with the active flag, but you can't mess with the number from then on. I think that's going to give apps what they want and be by far the simplest thing to specify.
Plus one.
Okay.
I agree. I don't think you should be using sender.set parameters to set the number of encodings in SGP. So we want all the SGP-related stuff on the transceiver and add transceiver APIs.
Okay, so we can add something that basically says don't ever do that. And it doesn't matter whether you've called set local or set remote, just don't ever do it. Okay.
Well, so if someone does it, what happens? Is it an error or is it ignored or what?
I think it's like an error along the lines of, you know, modifying a read-only parameter.
Sounds good.
Yeah, I agree.
Just you can't do it. Okay. And I don't think anybody's going to cry over not being able to do it because, like Peter said, you can activate or inactivate the encoding. So just, like, ask for the maximum you could want and deal with it there. Okay. 941, auto discovery.
You skipped the second slide there. Bernard, did we talk about
The second one is just it's not really a question. It's just reminding people that you can you could just ask for as many as you could possibly need and then just inactivate them if you wanted less. Like, just don't send them. You don't have to change the number of them or anything, just to make that clear.
Okay, so in the turn discovery is the question how to use with the VARC DCPC. And in the actual draft that described turn discovery, described that it needs a domain name or it is trying to send the stun, allocate a request and get back in the alternate server at the real IP address of the server, the closest server. So the question is how to implement this with the peer connection, and so we need a DCP domain attribute or the domain or the domain name from the identity name of the user. So this input information. I think because the WebRTC ICE agent could send out and stun request and all the stun client is implemented there, so it has a good position to handle this stun turn auto discovery. And it works in the low level, and it has access to the DHCP domain, and it has information about network changes and good rerun discovery if the topology changes. So the goal is to find the closest stun turn server doing anycast discovery using stun. Were sending out based on the domain name DNS requests, and after that giving back this list to the application or the browser, and after that if the browser has this information, could get credential for these test servers, because it is only discovering the servers and no credentials, but maybe some credential is needed to use some servers. So it is if it needs some credential, then the application could request from the authorization server some credential for
just,
the.
Just a clarifying question here: is there any case ever where a credential is not needed? I thought on all cases a credential is needed with some term.
I think if there is a local LAN and maybe it is allowed local.
Wouldn't that be in violation of the term spec?
Maybe.
I'm pretty sure it would be.
And so.
This is sort of side. What I'm going to get to over that is, I think we need to address the how we get the credentials as part of how to bring this all together. That's all. I'm not. Whether it's only some of the time or the all the time is hardly relevant for the conversation. We probably need to figure out how you get credentials, is my point.
Okay. The question is who needs to get the credential, because the trust base is the browser, or the application need to get credential and this server is. So who has the control of the Tern servers and the Tern agents? The Tern servers. So what Tern servers to use? And this is also question. But my idea was that the WebRTC stack creating a list and discovering the closest Tern servers based on the domain name and all the spun Anycast discovery that it could run and after that trigger an event and send back to the application a list of discovered Tern server, and then the application could somehow get credential for the Tern servers that are the list of Tern servers that are discovered. And this was the main idea, but after I discussed it with Harald, Harald has a strong position. He thinks that we need to implement this in a separated API and not in the PC. And I see still some points why it has some benefits to integrate closely into the peer connection. But I'm okay if you. If you think that we should move this out and implement it in a separate API.
So just one other question here. Can we go back on one slide? You talk about getting the domain, the DHCP domain attribute, or there's a DHCP Sun and Tern server attribute too, right? I don't really know how the browser application can get those from the operating system on most operating systems. Like, have you looked at that at all? Is that possible?
I'm not sure, but I hope the WebRTC engine is working in the low level things and with get informed with the network changes, so maybe. It could get some information.
I think on Windows you can get it.
Okay.
But you can't ask for it, which is the problem, right? You can't ask for it, but DHCP won't return stuff you don't ask for.
But for example, Anycast discovery could happen. So the WebRTC engine could send out the spam allocate request to an Anycast address of the Tern servers and get back the real address of the server.
But we don't need any change to do Anycast. You can just put an Anycast address in today and it works. So if all we're going to get is Anycast,
that's a good point.
Sorry, I didn't catch it. Your last sentence, Colin.
Yeah, so, just add the Anycast address to iServers, and that's what Colin was saying. Why wouldn't that work?
Yes, but if you need authentication for any cast, then maybe it's not so easy if the authentication is per server and not per all the turn domain. I mean, so if you need a different credential for the specific server, I mean, so if you discover the IP address of the closest server, then you can get credential for this specific turn server. For example.
But the Sun, I mean, well, I guess the Sun server would give you an answer.
But yeah, so the idea was that to somehow use the discovery, the turn discovery, and find the closest server as possible from the domain name and from the Anycast discovery information, and find the closest server, because I think in the turn it is important to find the closest turn server to the client. So what is at the edge?
I totally agree on trying to find an optimal turn server, not disagreeing with that at all, and interesting ways to do that. But this is hard because we also have the finger. I mean, I'm sort of wondering about how the permissions would work on this too, because if you return to the JavaScript, if you allow the JavaScript to run whatever mechanism it is and get this list back of IP addresses of the nearest server, you've more or less revealed the location of the person by revealing the nearest server. So, you know, we need to think about how the permission grants would all work for this, too, of when you can do it and who gets it. It's quite different if the application's getting it versus the browser's getting it.
Yeah, especially in the light of that we actually filter what IP addresses that are revealed already.
Okay.
I think, I mean, we are out of time now, unfortunately, MEC. Okay. I think we would have to continue this discussion at a later occasion.
Thanks.
But thanks for introducing this to us. And thanks, everyone, for joining today. And thanks, Jan-Iva, for scribing. And talk
Thank
to you all
you.
Later on.
Thanks.
Happy New Year.
Bye. Happy New Year. Bye.
Yeah, bye. Bye. Bye.